Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Relative Pitch. I hope you are doing fabulously on this beautiful Wednesday that this is going to be recorded and let out. Today, we have such a special guest with us. I'm so excited for the wonderful conversations we're going to have today. Please welcome Claire B. Crawford, which she is the assistant professor in the Department of Politics and International Affairs and the Program of African American Studies at Wake Forest University. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
Also, is that Doc Crawford?
It is Doc.
Yeah. Doc. Okay.
Yes. And we are, first of all, congratulations on receiving your doctorate degree. I know that's a recent thing, isn't it?
Yeah, last May. I'm like, I think this week would be basically when I defended my dissertation last year. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. I mean, as all of us, we're like eventually going to get our doctorates. I mean, Lauren is currently in the process to get her doctorate. It is a big deal to receive that doctorate, in that dissertation, and get onto the working world. I know that was a little stressful a year ago today.
Yes, definitely stressful. But it's done, and it can be done, right? And I did it. I did it in five. And so I was like, we got to wrap this up and then keep it rolling.
You got to.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Crawford, if you could, you know, give our audience a little background about yourself and how did you, you know, come to where you are today?
Yeah. So I guess I'll answer it kind of like the brown sugar question of like, when did you first fall in love with hip hop? But for me, I'll say like, when did I first fall in love with like Black sound? I grew up in Lithonia, Georgia. My parents are medical physicians and my dad's also a pastor. So I grew up in Georgia. And really like on the pew, understanding like this is a collective space of like Black life. But I was always interested, particularly and kind of thinking through the international presence of Blackness. So I went to DC for undergrad. I went to George Washington, studied like international affairs and Africana studies was what I did there. Really wanted to be a diplomat. Life changed a little bit in 2016. So I was like, I don't need to be in DC. So it's like, we got time. I'm young. We could go do something else in the meantime. Applied to PhD programs, really wanted to live on the West Coast just to like do something different as being like a Southerner and then being in DC. Got in USC, went out there. And in 2019, actually, both of my grandmothers were sick. And so I spent a lot of time in South Georgia because going between my granny and my grandmother, and essentially, unfortunately, my granny died. But one of those Saturdays that I spent down there, I actually stopped by the Albany Civil Rights Museum. It's a little small institute. It's attached to one of the original churches that they had mass meetings in. And, you know, they tell the story of the Albany movement as a failure, as a political failure. So when we think about like civil rights movement success, we usually put a name to it as like everything was desegregated. There was immediate like resolve of the city that like segregation was bad. The laws changed. You know, Black people now get to go places, right? That did not happen immediately in Albany, Georgia as a result of the movement. So it's not really usually defined as a successful political movement. However, that same day, the SNCC, original SNCC Freedom Singers are there. So the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committees, Freedom Singers were established during the movement in Albany, Georgia. And some of them still live there. And so they sing every second Saturday at the Albany Civil Rights Institute. And I happen to be there on the second Saturday. And so I was sitting on a pew in the original church there, I think it's Mount Zion, and essentially just like hearing them sing, I came to this question of like, is the movement still alive? Or did the movement die if the song lives, right? That was kind of like original kind of question of my work. And that kind of changed over time. I think at one point I was challenged since we were talking about like trap music. I listen to Atlanta trap all day, every day, consistently. If I had to choose something I grew up on, it would be like gospel and hymns and then like Atlanta trap music, right? And so I'm like, yeah, no, we can make this like political too. So somewhere in there became really interested in being like, what is the political value of trap? You know, it's one of the undervalued sounds because it's considered illegible. And so I think there's something powerful though about Black folks remaining to choose illegible. And so we hear that though also in like spirituals. We hear that in like not really understanding the full capacity of like the Black Southern tongue. And so it brought me to my dissertation, which ended up being called Hum So the Devil Doesn't Hear You, Black Rural Southern Existences in the In-Between. And really theorizing through the lived experience of Black folks saying, like, I became political because we sung together. What does that mean? And it really wasn't just like the singing. If you listen back to some of those mass meetings, it's the collective practice of humming. It is this like a moment where strangers in some capacity, even though they lived in the same city, found themselves in song, in sound. And so instead of saying that we like should sign on to democracy, right? Like when we think about lettered forms of democracy, we think about laws. I say like, let's let people sing democracy. It doesn't have to be legible. And there's a lot of truth and power in understanding how people feel like they sound and that being like the source of their being. So that's me in a pretty good wrap up right there.
Wow.
Ooh,
Right.
that's you make me want to read your dissertation, and I really hate reading. So that's like powerful, because like you were saying the title, and I said, "Oh my God! Like, should I start reading again?" It was, yeah,
Well, yes, you
that's
should always
awesome.
read. Reading is fun.
Well, that's what they say now.
That is what they say. I want to point out just one little thing. I mean, there's so much that we could point out from just your first opening, but I think there's a shared experience in Black Southern people. And when you said it, I immediately just resonated with it about the dualistic mindset that we all share of growing up with gospel, but also growing up with trap music and the way those kind of mesh in each other, but also for so long, people have put these two genres separate, but they actually have a way more common ground than most people would I guess care to admit to, because of sacred versus secular, things like that. Can you talk a little bit about those shared experiences between those genres?
Yeah, no, I mean, Southern hip hop as a whole, right? So trap music being just like one of the iterations of Southern hip hop, particularly coming out of what we would consider like urban South spaces, right? And so sometimes sharing like qualities with like how we think of hip hop generally as like either like gangster rap or like New York rap, right? But what's happening there is I think they take like elements of like the church makeup. Like I love to talk about the Migos as like a Southern gospel trio, right? We hear key elements of like Black sound in the South, call and response, right? Like they do it with each other. They do it live. It's in the ad libs. It's not like a good moan or hum that you will hear from the mother in the church, but it's like take off coming back in and saying bow, bow, right? Like, and it's like Waka coming in and making sure that like, you know, we know when I don't know about y'all, I remember the experience of like Heart in the Paint coming on, and it's like you knew what that first kind of like bass drop beat meant. And it's just like you all stop like jumping together. And it's like that's the same thing that's happening in the pews, right? Like this like collective thing where we know when that particular organ note and that first downbeat, if you like, wait, I know what this song is and we know where we're going. And we're like, and so instead of like maybe waving your hand, the hand turns into like a little fist pump, right? So it's like we see these things being merged. And I think it's just like, I know sometimes it's hard because we do want to separate this like sacred and secular, but like Black life has never done that successfully. We have been trying to categorize it to make it fit into the categories of like white Western society, but it's never the thing, right? Like we know as much as like gospel comes out of the blues and the juke joint. And the church was like a reflective movement space from that, right? Like they talk about it, right? About it all the time. People be in the juke joint till 4 a.m. and in the church pew at 8 a.m. in the same clothing, doing the similar thing, right? And so it's the same thing with the trap house, particularly as we started thinking about like church spaces not being the main space that Black life gathers. And so people recreate it. Like when we think about the trap house as an abandoned space, as a dismissed space. We know that so much organically in like Black Southern life. And so it's like here, people become something, right? Like you gave me, I always say, you gave me something that you consider trash, and I made it gold. Like this is a billion-dollar industry at this point, and it comes out of the fact that you said, you know, when we hear like the Migos talk about bando, the abandoned houses has becomes home and becomes now worth $1 million that, you know, people doing trap yoga on the beach in Malibu. Like, it's like people are using to signal authenticity. And so there's always something though that we know, like even like when Zora Neale Hurston talks about the characteristics of like Negro expression, this like drama, the repetition, the mimicry that like literally is a part of how Black folks express themselves, is then just copied over into trap music. Except sometimes we want to say it looks violent, it looks like this, but it's like, is that not reflective of the society that is? And so instead of just like crying out for Jesus in this way, they like, hey, you say I gotta pick up a gun to survive, I'm gonna figure out how to do that. You say I gotta like sell drugs, I saw, that's why I always say it's an illicit American dream. And I think that it is reflective of that journey of like, hey, you said we were healed after the civil rights movement. You know, we got the growing Black middle class. We got this rise of like in the 90s of hip hop, Southern hip hop coming in sort of more so towards the end of that. And then we get to the early 2000s, we go through like dance, you know, through like these really high areas of like Southern hip hop, right? And then we get back to it in the 2010s and it's like, what does that beat? And it's like, oh yeah, it's a little different from like the early, particularly the latter part of trap, right? Like the early trap when we started thinking about more so TI and like what like Young Jock and all of them are doing is a little different than when we see the rise of like the Migos, Young Thug, who are also giving us their emotive presence. And it's really just like a reflective of society's storytelling. It's the same thing. Except this time, instead of like storytelling in the name of Christ, we storytelling in the name of like my own Black being. Like has to survive this space. Yeah.
That's amazing. Like I did like very measly research on the rise of Southern hip hop in Atlanta and stuff during my master's because I just did not want to write about Strauss, Mahler, and all that stupid stuff. And I was like, let me write about the music I like to listen to. And like I really loved Outkast, and that was because of like Anthony, and then just like I just love like Andre 3000 especially was the one person that I was just like clung on to. And but I've never, I wish your research was out like when I was doing this, but I was like, I wish I would have known about it. It's like I never really drew the connection of the church and the music and like the trap music or hip hop music and how like the way you just explained it makes so much sense. And it's like it's just like it. It's just like an experience. It's not like we're calling out the name of the Christ. It's like this is just like who I am, and this is my being in today walking down the street. And it's just like, oh, that was so eloquent and amazing.
Thank you.
Well, very quickly, it was something that you brought up in your interview with Melissa Harris Perry about how even for the Freedom Songs, they took those same spirituals that were sang in the church and they removed Jesus and put freedom into it. And that is what I kind of relate to when you were talking about trap music. It's like, okay, yes, this is a similar message, but this is what we're dealing with today. And this is how it relates to me as I am, as you said, my well-being as a Black person in 2024 or whenever it is. I think that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
This is so, hearing you talk about all of this and also the background of your father being a was it a pastor? My father was also a bishop here in like the South, and it's such an interesting perspective of growing up as a PK, a BK, and like for me at least specifically, my parents did not want us listening to like trap or rap, and that was not something that was really too like around in the household space. We needed to listen to gospel, James Brown, Whitney Houston, like that kind of, which is, you know, its whole other category of amazingness. But like you're saying, the ties that you can see within all the genres of Black sound, I had to kind of later on in life find my way kind of to that on my own. My brother kind of, especially with this, he went to like our zone school. I was at a fine arts school here in my hometown. So, and that's where I found classical music and growing up, like, and that's where my path was. So it took me even, I think, longer to find where that my ear was within like hip hop, rap, trap music, because it took me a while to get there. It was not necessarily something that was around me a lot. So this is an experience that I've heard from a lot, because there's a lot of us, a lot of PKs and BKs from the South, specifically within this like the field of like classical music also, but also within this like like interdisciplined studies between like more political social movements and music is becoming a way bigger thing than I'm finding that identity. And we always talk about having to re not like almost like decolonize our own brains of like what we were told rap music was. It was violent, we were not supposed to listen to it, and then having to find our way where all of it makes sense. And that's kind of where I have thankfully found myself, is now I can see all these similarities and I can appreciate all these genres and go like, oh, I do hear that call and response there. Oh, I really do hear that underlying beat within that gospel song that reminds me of this Migos song. Like, it's all there. And you paint such a, because I really want to talk about this idea of like music as a form of liberation, because this is a big thing that's happening right now, especially within musicology and ethnomusicology studies within like the music field right now, especially on the classical side, as they're trying to open up a lot more into this idea of Black sound. There's actually a fabulous book that just came out by Dr. Matthew Morrison called Black Sound, which is fabulous. Shout out. I feel like I've talked about him multiple times already, like this past month, but shout out to you because you're amazing. But there's this now more open discussion, and this you I think you said Black tongue is like as well, and not even just like music, but like what we're saying and how that in itself is such a liberating form of like democracy without it being centralized to government. I don't know. I'm going crazy. I'm saying a lot of words, but it's because you, my brain is like doing this right now with everything you've said. But especially 2020, like with everything that was happening, classical music, we got shook in a lot of ways, like a lot of other fields did. And I feel like this is the shaking that kind of allowed there were cracks that finally allowed for these conversations to be heard, where we're seeing conversations of like trap music within classical music spaces. That would have never happened. I would have never have seen that before. Like this time period, we actually need that. I want to highlight that because I know there is so much tragedy that happened. We all lost people within this time frame of, 2020 to like where we are now in 2024, but also the amount of liberation that was able to happen because we finally were able to name and see what we were seeing and being able to like bridge back together. I feel like especially this idea of Black identity within music as well has been even more highlighted, and I think pushed to our generation as well, because like we're technically Gen Zers. And so, like, I think sometimes it's taken us a little bit longer to find our footing as well within this conversation. And it's very helpful to have people who've already been doing this work who can, we can see and go, oh my God, there's a dissertation out there that I can go read that already talks about it all. So, yeah, that's a lot. But it's just so many things you said that brought up to my mind. Yeah.
So when we talk about something, when I heard the podcast that you were on about the drum major, how Martin Luther King was a drum major of the movement, and I think it was pointed out about who was the band, who was the people that were also there that maybe didn't get the I guess popular name as Dr. King. But as far as it is in trap music, rappers now are the drum majors. Who will be the band now? Who's the audience? Who are those people for this current generation?
Cool. I mean, that's a great point. And just like just to build off of that, right? Like I'm like right at the edge of like millennial life to like
Same.
and so I think the one thing about trap music is we know hip hop in general is mostly consumed by teenage white men, right? Like teenage white boys. Those are who consume hip hop. Those are who go viral for like knowing all the lyrics to like Kendrick Lamar, Busta Rhymes, right? Like these are the people who are like memorizing this thing. And so I think something as we also know about music is that like Anyone can choose to be a listener, and listening is 100% like a political act, right? Like Nina Edstein really breaks that down in The Race of Sound, right? Like the idea of like listening as a political act. And so when I think about like who's the man for trap life, I think it could be anybody, because I do think this idea of trapness is more like, good say more like trap with an asterisk, right? Like obviously we know there's like trap life literally. A physical space is a physical act, but you know, I mean, to be honest, I always say we could turn any of our spaces into a trap house if you really wanted to, right? Like overnight, you could have a trap house. However, this idea though, right? Like when we talk about someone like Outkast, and so we think about the origin of the word trap, and when we first start hearing it in hip hop, one of the ones that really comes to me is in Spotty Yaddy Dopalicious, where Big Boy at the end, you know, he's talking about like trying to get a job at the UPS, right? And he's like, you know, but then I'm gonna probably have cloudy piss, and so I gotta go back to the trap and do what? Be just trapped. And so that experience, I think, is universal, no matter like the situation. And I think that's the one thing that like can happen. We could all relate, and so it's a choice to listen to like. Find it to be deeper because it's something that you feel, right? And so this is the other thing about like mumbling, like mumble rap. People think of mumble rapping, and particularly with trap music, as being apolitical because it's not, it doesn't say anything. You can't hear anything clearly, but we know like that emotive feeling of the sound is the thing that really like holds people. And so I think that there's a message for the people who are from the space that the people that rappers are talking about, but I also think that there's this like broader thing that folks pick up on and it feels legible to them, even if they have no relation to like trapping, to the space, to trap life, to the type of like systematic violence that builds a trap house, right? Like just come out the blue. They're not spaces of choice, they're spaces of necessity. And so like I think there is a message to people from that space who get to hear it played and see it. But then I think there's this broader feeling of like we all have a version of what we feel like feels like a trap to us, you know? And so we to turn that. I think this is the thing. That's why I called it Dreams from the Trap, because I remember a couple of folks were mad. I wrote that in 2020. So like it was right after like Bigger Picture came out. And I was like, oh, look at this. This is my little avenue to be like, see, like people are reflecting here. And so I think it couldn't be an organizing tool. That's why I said it could be a possibility of liberatory practice, right here in this moment where folks are feeling trapped in whatever the situation it is. And like these folks, these rappers are going to be the people that they're listening to, and responding to and hearing. And so I don't think it has risen yet to the possibility of it being an organizing tool in the way that it could be. So when we start thinking about like this band, I think that there's still just like a little bit, but I think it's gonna be chaotic. I don't think it's gonna have like a unified sound in any capacity. But I think it'll have like a unified feeling of like everybody's trying to get out of something, like you're trying to go bigger than like what life is at this moment, right? To like leave the trap house, to get out of being trapped is something greater. But it's really interesting when we think about trap music, unlike other musical styles, is you know, like Jay-Z gets to be a luxury rapper now, right? Like he can like rap ape shit in the Louvre, right? But I don't think the Migos would have been able to escape and to be a luxury went from the field of like trap music, right? Like even if we think about someone like T.I., like T.I. recently celebrated, was it 25 years? I want to say it was 25 of his but he did it at with the symphony, right? The Atlanta Symphony.
Yeah, the Atlanta Symphony.
And so even then, right, like there was almost some people read it, like I remember a conversation I had with friends, they're like they read it as like him trying to make the music more acceptable versus like being a cosign from like a classical musical style to say that trap music is valid versus like would it been just as valid if he just rapped the whole entire album and we would have been okay with that. And so it's just like I don't know, I feel like trap music has a harder space in the sense that it doesn't get a chance to be like elevated. Like we don't want the Carter's album from 2 Chainz, right? But like because then we'd be like that's not what we summed up to like listen for.
Listen to.
But we provided a little bit of space from like Jay-Z to go from like this disco goat boy over for the last like 30 years of his career to like transform in stages. And so I always wonder that. I think that's the question that I hold. So it's like when we talk about it, this like being drum major for particularly trap artists, do they get to change like and grow? Because they all like millionaires at this point. But we don't want to hear Gucci talk about like being, you know, together and not drinking. We want old,
Yeah.
right? We want like old Gucci who's not going like talk about that. So I always wonder that part, but I think that's what makes it a little bit universal because the feeling of trappedness can be talked about in so many different ways and it's expansive and is reflective of
Yeah.
various social, political moments. But I always wonder like, is there a space like if they leave the trap, can they like go like right? Like I think Little Baby has a documentary called Untrapped or something like that. And but do we actually want him to be untrapped for the sake of like the sound?
Yeah. This whole like you're talking about like trap as a space sometimes and being untrapped and trapped. It's like I'm starting to like gauge more things. And you were talking about like sometimes what'd you say was the main demographic or the main listeners?
Like teenage white boys, I mean, listeners
So
of.
like yeah, so I'm thinking about that from like my hometown, which I'm from Macon, got an address, but I went to like not where Anthony went. I went to Jones County High School, which is like a primarily white. And I remember that was always bumping. And then now I'm re remembering looking back and like how many of those people I graduated with are still in that town, but they listen to this music. So that feeling of that space of trap and trapped is like, do they feel like they're trapped in their hometown and can't leave? And it's just like the way you're putting it is making me think of things differently and making it like look in different spaces. Now, I want to just for our audience, could you give us like three or four mumble rap artists that they could maybe go listen to and like experience what that is like?
So I mean just because Young Thug is on everybody's mind with this case, like going to listen to Young Thug is a one off the back, right? So right, the word like phrase mumble rap literally comes from other rappers labeling particularly several rappers in the Atlanta trap scene as mumble rappers. So like Future gets called a mumble rapper as well, right? Waka is called a mumble rapper. I wouldn't say all of the Migos are called mumble rapper, but Offset is usually considered like a mumble rapper. Little Baby for sure. If you want to leave the Atlanta area, like basically everybody in Memphis is considered because they have a
Gotcha.
rap scene is considered a mumble rapper, but it's usually labeled onto Southern rappers like
Is that
directly.
because of like the southern like dialect?
Yes, it's.
Okay.
Oh, the Southern tongue for sure, right? Like
Okay.
where it doesn't feel like, right? Like Southerners are told that we don't speak clear, that you are not legible, right? And so, like, let's say, for instance, I always like to say, if would Waka's song have gone hard if you would have heard consistency? Oh, let's do it. But does it make more sense if you say, oh, do it, right? You say, oh, let's do
Yeah.
it. And you're like,
Yeah.
yeah.
What it's like, and also I feel like, and this is what like we low key, like the podcast has low key like been like Southern people. Like we get a lot of people from Georgia without even knowing it. It's because like there's that vibe. It's like, oh yeah, we mess with each other. And like the one thing I hate about people be like shitting on Southern people a lot. But I'm
Yes.
like, y'all, baby, y'all don't know how to cook. First of all, second of all, when I come into your space, don't be like, oh, I know you're not from here. I don't want to be from here. I love where I live. Thank you. Like when I go to New York or like Minnesota and all these places, they're like, oh, you're not from here. Where are you from? Don't worry about it, baby. I know where I am. You know where you are. Like, let's just keep it there. But that's the thing. Like, and all my friends, like when they finally come to the South and experience like some of the city, like Atlanta City life or like wherever they choose to go, they're like, oh, it's not that bad. I'm like, yeah, because you just make it out to be bad. Because like we do have some political overhangings in some of our states, but like you let that rule everything. You don't come in and experience the life or know people and ask them like what it's like to be here. Now I will say I do shit on other regions because you know Southern is like the best, but I feel like because the dialect and the mumble rap, I'm like that's starting to make more sense and how that is like talked down about maybe a little bit because it's illegible. And it's like it's another ding on Southern culture and like Southern Black culture, especially.
Yeah, right. So like when you think about the rise of Southern hip hop, I mean, we talked a little bit about Outkast, like Regina Bradley's work. She's at Kansas.
Ah,
Yeah, right. And so
go who
yeah. Chronicling Stanktonia. We're
Okay,
talking about the
yeah, no, hard work is super dope, right? And when she had her podcast, Bottom of the Map, I used to listen to that all the time, and her book, The Rise of Stankonia, you know,
Yeah.
that moment at the Vibe Awards, I think the 94 Vibe Awards, where we get Outkast being booed, right? Like that was the first time where we're like, what is this? And so, you know, there's great books like The Third Coast that talks about like hip hop only having particularly like this sort of West East Coast thing.
Yep.
Outkast doing something completely different sonically, and it's in the slowness. So like not only do we have the mumble, but we also have the slowness of the voice, like right, like I know I don't have an accent, but people remind me all the time that I talk particularly slow to them. And I'm just like, it is what it is, right? Like I'm from where I'm from, and we okay with
Yeah.
that. And so also we also think about the South and Black life. We don't see freedom in the South. So I'm working on a piece right now called The Countryness of Black Political Thought, where I'm trying to like, I mean, most of my work is geared towards returning us to thinking about like Black rural South as the space of a political becoming that was creating freedom. It just doesn't look like this idea of escape, right? Like we've been as Black folks have been escaping the South since the end of slavery, right? And everything else is free outside of the space. And so why would you stay? Like, so like, why did your family stay? Like when I started teaching at Occidental when I was in school at USC in LA, I had a student ask me if I grew up on a plantation, right? Because they had such crazy understanding of
Wow.
like the South is, right? And so when we started to think about Southern hip hop, it's like, how dare you make noise from the place we were supposed to leave? And how dare you try to like enter as a like a valid source of voice when, you know, hip hop begins as this sort of like critical kind of like think piece of like, yo, this is what urban life is. And they're like, you're not urban. You chose to be basically enslaved still in some capacity is how like we picture and particularly Black folks who stay in the South, like you're backwards. You're not like elevated. You can't. And so the choice to remain, keep your speech slow, keep your speech mumbling, I think it's just like a continued existence from the murmurs of the plantation that kept Black life resilient, off the script and off stage. Like that is where the source of power comes from. Cause you know, like, I mean, y'all are sound folks. I was like, oh, not me coming to talk about sound with people who play actual instruments, you know. Like when you talk about like the voice, like I always say, like the voice is the instrument I pay attention to, right? And so
Yeah.
talk about the voice, like it takes more control to like speak softer, to mumble than it does to speak loudly, right? And so we think about the type of power and control that Black rural folks have over their body to mumble in the presence of fear, to mumble in the presence of like knowing that your life is on the line. And that continues into trap music. Like it continues, it's a continuation, it's honoring like just like how the Black Southern tongue exists, slow, maybe a little bit more like deliberate and like you didn't catch all my words, but who did catch all of them, they caught them. Like that was for
Caught it.
them, right?
That it was meant for. Caught
Yeah,
it. Yeah.
yes. And that's it. Like we don't have to, ain't got to be clear for everybody, but like it's for the right crowd. Like they got it. They know exactly what I'm saying.
I like that you just said that because specifically talking about the right crowd, and I want to bring it back to like this idea of perspective because within the classical music scene, a lot we have a there's more of us. It's not nearly enough, if especially if you look at statistics, especially when you look at symphony orchestra specifically, which is more of like my where I'm kind of stationed in right now. But going back to the conversation or what you were talking about, T.I. doing that performance with the Atlanta Symphony and how that sent different messaging to different groups and different people, because like, I've seen Common now twice, like play with, I think, the Atlanta Symphony and Seattle Symphony. And this is something that I think a lot of, and I think we had, oh my gosh, who was it? Like there's just so many different like rappers who have done this type of model of like playing with or singing with a symphony. And I will say on the symphony side, thinking about that, it's like, this is really cool because now I feel like multiple forms of my identity I'm getting to see mesh together. And so from my perspective, I'm like, heck yeah, like this is really cool. And this is like, this makes sense to me. But I can also see someone who has seen and looked up to these particular artists in a way of like saying, no, you were this though. And we were rocking with you. Like we thought that this is what you were. And so seeing it, I think in a lot of ways, whenever we see artists move throughout their discography, sometimes it may feel as if when they switch it up that we feel like they're saying, oh, I don't do that stuff anymore because now I'm doing this, which actually is not the case for majority of artists. There are some artists who make it very clear that they're like, I am leaving this part of me behind and I'm
Yep.
no longer going to do that. But I think for me, when I see this like Common and like TI doing these kinds of things with like symphonies or whatever else they're doing, I don't see it as a, I'm never doing what I used to do ever again. It's just they are expanding it almost as a recognition that this is also now a new space where blackness, black sound can be seen within, like, especially the class. And this is like one of the later, we are late. Symphony orchestras specifically are very late to the game. And we are trying to push that from the inside. But for us, it is such an important thing to have these artists on stage with us and to now feel as if it's being accepted, and we're all and the people who are not with it, they have to get with it because we're like, this is happening, this is like a part in terms of internally. So I wanted to highlight that the nuances and the fact that we keep saying it's not a monolithic experience. Like even though we have commonalities and similarities in our upbringings and experiences, it is still not the same. Our perspectives are not always the same because we are all on such diverging paths in other ways, even though there's obviously something that links us, throughout. So I wanted to highlight that as well.
No, I think that's I agree with you, and I only pushback I have is, but make sure the trap can come. So you can't charge $300 and then tell them what they have to wear.
So, actually,
We say all of that because that is what gets on my last freaking nerve, is that these organizations will try to broaden their perspectives and everything, but then the actual people who needs to be there, who has been rocking for this whole time,
can't afford it.
they can't afford it, they're not allowed to. So really, who is this for? Who is that audience?
So I was literally gonna, I pulled up the press release from the concert real quick, just for everybody in the audience. If y'all want to try to come at us, it's not the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, it's the Atlanta Pops Orchestra. It was just in Symphony Hall. But here's one thing, I have two qualms with this. One, you brought it up. It said the dress code for the evening is black tie and formal attire, underscoring the significance of this monumental event. The other thing it says, it was like talking about trap music, and then it said, to make the evening more majestic. That's why they involve the Atlanta Pops Orchestra. I'm like, why do we need to make it more majestic? Like, it's supposed to be what it is. It's just in a different setting. So, like, I don't think we need to reword it for like the white audiences or the right audiences. I think the people who need to come need to come. And that's why, like, that was my only qualms. I had a couple of musicians that played in the concert, their friends. But I just pulled up the code and it said, yeah, dress code is black tie, formal attire. And then it had a whole thing about let's make it more majestic. And that's why he chose to do it with the Atlanta Pops and all this other stuff.
Oh, I can say something about that too, because now being on this other side and working like behind the scenes at a symphony has allowed me to talk to artists and like actually hear what kinds of procedures and practices come from us versus what comes from the audience. Because we have had situations where we think we like these artists come in and we're like, oh, great, we really want to open it up and make it like this, and we want to do this. And they actually push back against us and they actually say, actually, I don't want that. I want it to be like black tie. I want it to be these kinds of people in the audience because for what either it's something for them specifically or their management saying they want this kind of look. They want to have an opportunity to say, hey, we also do this. So I will say that as well. I'm not saying because the institutions absolutely do it, and the ones who do it all know exactly who you are. But there are also instances throughout an artist's career where maybe they're under fire for other different things, or it's just their management, or they themselves have something going on where they feel as if they need to cater to a different kind of audience. So the idea of like when we're talking about who's a drum major, who's a band, who's an audience, that is also a super major thing as well, because you may never know if you're just someone who sees this, see TI is playing with Atlanta Pops. you might have varying perspectives of why the procedures are, why are the tickets that high, why is the dress code like that, why do they choose to play it? I get it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have a full
Yeah.
critique of, let's if we keep it 100, like all the black male rappers of like the early 2000s are all conservative and just like capitalists and don't really care about anymore about like the places that they come from. It's just a good tagline to then be like, I can buy up all of like downtown Atlanta, right?
Right.
Like hey, him 2 Chainz, because if we go back to 2020, he was on TV telling people to go inside. So we're not gonna say that he's like living this.
Bring it up, but you bring it up. So look, there it
So that's why I was like, I don't really talk about TI like that, but I just thought it was interesting
Yeah.
that he did it, because it's very clear that, he's making bread off of an identity, right? And then he also gets to tell the story of trap, because he was the first one to make this like trap museum. And so when we started talking about like narratives and the way that like history goes on, it's the person who chooses to tell the story first that gets like control of it. And so like
Yeah.
he control over like what that means, because he chose to tell the story first and put it in a building, right? And that is the thing that like Western society respects. And so he's very much like moving in that way. So I'm sure 100% it was his idea to like
Yeah.
do this, like 100% it's his idea.
Yeah.
But then he'll be the same person being like, I'm still the rubber band
That dual, he's trying
man.
to live in both arenas of life. And it goes back to the thing about, can you evolve from where you started from? And of course you can, but you still have to give reverence to where you came from. You cannot just turn your back because, or you can't turn your back behind closed doors when you think the audience isn't looking. You doing, behind the door deals where you're, buying up Atlanta, you're doing all this stuff, but then you come with a new track and you're like, oh yeah, I'm still the same one from the streets. And it's like, no, you're not actually. You're actually doing a way bigger disservice than you think that you're doing. I'm gonna take something I wrote so much down. So I'm just gonna come out with it all. Well, the first thing is, as we were talking about the murmurs and the moans and things of trap music, it's like taking it back to the spirituals and things like that. And I heard you reference when Dr. Martin Luther King would give a speech, he would make space for the moans, the wail, the this, the all of that. And so there is a space for that in our music and talking about how Black people speak. I think you mentioned when Du Bois, I think, came to Alabama and heard what it sounded like from true Southern life. Like I know Michael has been present when I get on the phone with my mom, my grandmom. It is a complete different thing. Like both of those women come from backwoods Georgia, very rural era areas. So it's like, this is one how I grew up speaking, So, and it's always funny because when I would then change to talking like I have degrees, they're like, why are you talking like that? I'm like, I'm sorry, it's okay. I'm sorry. Let me go back. So that is just part of our speech. And I think trap artists now, that is just like, I'm not going to put on a show for you to understand what I'm saying. Because as we said earlier, if it is meant for you to understand the people that needs to, they're going to understand exactly what they said. So that was just that, just tying that spirituals to trap. But I really want to talk about two things specifically: the conservative male rappers of today, the inclusive or exclusive treatment of women Southern rappers, and the queer involvement within Southern rap.
That's heavy.
It is.
It's getting critical.
No. I mean, so many categories. Like the question I always get is, who would be like these women of trap music kind of thing, right? And it's like, I know like more like mixtape type women of trap music, but we don't really have like this really visible like trap music sound, right? Like, I mean, Meg Thee Stallion is a southern rapper just based off of like her ties there to Houston, and it's very clearly she like raps in a very like Houston style. One of my favorite rapper is Rhapsody, and she's out of like North Carolina, and like so she's coming out, but like very much just like it's southern rap because of how you listen to her speech, right? And you know, she also has a lisp. And so she like raps with the lisp, which is like a whole nother level of like measuring beat and like keeping the flow, right? But when we talk about queerness and hip hop, this is where I think we got to get into like the respectability politics that was created in hip hop. It's not the same. It's not the same as how we think about respectability politics. It's not like Du Bois is talented 10th, but it is like if we think about it's like 50 years of hip hop. And it's one of the most disputed like music genres of like what is hip hop and who is like holding what hip hop is together, right? So especially when you talk about the South, like nobody even thinks the South is rapping, and then all of a sudden now everyone's taking the flow of the South, and then we have the men in the South, rappers, male rappers in the South holding that back, right? Like, so not to just like continue to for T.I. to take another L. He teaches Iggy Azalea to rap with an Atlanta Blackcent. That was him. He's responsible for that, right? And like as if not like black girls in Atlanta who can rap. I mean, you know, we gotta think about like Latto, right? Like Latto raps. She's from Atlanta. I mean, even like was it when she was on that show, was it Rap Game
Rap
with like
BET.
And so like her, Super Peach, like I want to say her name is Onika, not like, she's out of Atlanta, like so all of these things are like people who are here rapping, but I don't know if they would identify themselves as trap artists. I mean, now you know people trying to say a lot of raps like 21 Savage, allegedly because they're dating, right? But like that is its own thing. But when we start talking about queerness in hip hop. I have this other great fascination as like a black queer woman who's also mass presenting. I'm always like, hip hop rappers are obsessed with particularly like lesbians and this concept of the strap, right? So we think of strapping as both sexually, but then also as the gun, right? Like it's like a very, it's one of those like taglines that people just pull out, right? And so like, and particularly, I think most recently would be like Drake's song with like Lil Baby, girls like girls where I'm from, right? And like she says, she a lesbian girl, me too, right? One of the more like visible people who got a lot of pushback and still does is like Young M.A., right? Coming out in 2016, ooh, like people didn't know that was a woman because of her voice, right? Like, and the depth of her voice. When the first song, there was no visuals of who she was. This song would just come on in the club and people would be like, oh yeah. But when you know, she says, you call her Stephanie, I call her Heffany. Then when they figure out it's a woman saying that, it's like, wait, like, that's not how it's raised, right? Like, so we're holding on to these sort of like weird hip hop holds on to like biblical understandings of like gender while like breaking every other rule. And it's like, this doesn't make any sense. And so when we talk about the conservative nature of this space, it's like, y'all have literally made a career out of breaking rules, but gender is where you like have a hold up at. And it's kind of
Made
like
no sense.
it doesn't like I when you try to like put it together, and it's just kind of like also think about like someone like Barack Obama's voice as being that of like 90s rappers as well, right? You think about if you listen back to his speeches and the speech pattern, like he lays out a verse, he has a chorus. He gives us a bridge sometimes and he comes back to a verse. Right? And so it's like you have had such influence. And I mean, this is where we start to say, like, are people products of the time also? Like hip hop still comes up at a particular time, right? Where there is these very clear understandings of like family and gender. And then, you know, it also comes as at a time where we have this idea that particularly the black man needs support and should be like risen up. It is the next thing coming out of like black power, right? And we have these like really poor understandings of what like equity looks like between black women and men. And then hip hop, the sound and the success of it solidifies, see, like black women are sexual objects. Black women are not good, right? They're not well. They should be underneath the man. And then so when we start seeing like Black women rise in hip hop, then we get stuck on like the first. Like we still saying the first. And it's like, I'm not ever like it's sad that somebody can look at you and be like, you're the second or you're this. And it's like, hey, this is 2024. Like we should not be having to be like, you're the first, right? And so like even about combining these experiences, as you're saying, Lauren, like we literally are still being like, this is the first time that this has happened. Like, and now we have a majestic, magical night of trap music, right? And so in hip hop, we have gatekeepers with a different set of respectability politics who broke every other rule to make sure hip hop was a thing. But then we'll look at somebody else and be like, don't do it. Like Saucy Santana, like the way that homie moves,
I
like
was literally about to bring him up.
it wrecks everyone,
Yes.
right?
Yes.
Like
Oh my gosh.
the way he moves wrecks, like the whole thing with academics wrecked everybody.
That was literally
Not
top. People were always talking about that.
yeah, like they wrecked everyone because it's like, wait, is he threatening sexual assault? Don't y'all do it? Like just like one-offs. It's just like one-off line in a sentence. At least he's saying it directly to a person and not just assuming a culture of like sexual assault
Right.
should be a valid thing. Like it's like, and so it's just like there is this weird sort of like, it's not weird, but it's just very much reflective of society that we lived in. It's patriarchy, it is misogyny, it's misogynoir specifically against like Black women and like this idea. So that's when we get somebody like Cat Williams who got on there, and I know it became a whole thing when he said like they all married like light skinned women with weird faces, and it was like started making a list of like what is this like trend and the way that we think about womanhood. And particularly for me, it's always just like think about queerness past the idea of like queer people. Black life is queer in the sense of it is always outside of the norm. It has always been politically, particularly socially, right? Like we really consider coming out of the particularly Black American life, coming out of enslavement and then being able to create a culture that is queer. That is like who, because if you were really following along, we should just be laboring bodies. But instead, people had greater visions of possibility and dreams and they abided by them. And so hip hop is a queer music act in the sense that it like it comes out of this place of despair, burning, doesn't exist. Like it's not using any, particularly at the time, some of like our understandings of music. And so it's like you created this very queerly. And now anybody else who like looks different that you don't want to co-sign, then you try to make sure you like shut them down, which is crazy being that we know like hip hop is like a universal sound and so many people can rap and so many people can do this thing, but we won't let them say that they represent hip hop. We try to change it around. And then I think that's like within the community and like it's a whole nother conversation of how like outside the community like puts it when you start thinking about genres and like Grammy categories. Right, because then like Lizzo becomes a rapper and like Doja is a rapper. And you have all these women who are then put into the rap category because you don't want to say that they're like mixing and blending in pop or like doing these other things. So when we start getting to like categories, it's like we have this like intra hip hop communal thing that's happening in conversation about women and particularly the disrespect of women and dismissal of women. And the lack of power of women, where it's just like, that's why like somebody like Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion, when like WAP came out, like that was destructive to so many people too. But then like we also like sort of is changing because I feel like GloRilla's latest song, everybody loves that song, right? Like everybody loves her saying like, yeah, Glow, right? Like we want to get hype with you. And so I feel like we're in an interesting shift of sound being that. Also, music doesn't stick around because we talk about it being like mainstream, particularly mainstream music. It's like you got someone's attention someday and the next day you don't. So it's just like we're going up. And to be honest, the old heads can't keep up because they was dropping CDs. And so technology just moved on and you just got to claim your space. And that's the other thing about like growth or something. You got to know when you like sit down. Like when somebody said to me, I'm older than hip hop as a response to me talking about trap music. What does that have to do with me? Like, what does that have to do with the state of the sound? Right? Like, you got to But I feel like because it's so new and because people are alive being like, I'm older than hip hop, they don't want to let it go. And so now we got these like, now we got Ice Cube taking like Tucker Carlson through the hood.
So weird.
It's so weird. It doesn't make sense when you think about it, but it's just like that's where they've gone with their success. Like that's where they've gone. They were using this as a route to the American dream. And they acted in it. Like it is what it is.
And then once they quote unquote got the American dream, they forgot where they came from and how they got there.
Yes.
And that to me, I think kind of sums up everything that we've just talked about, of that idea of American dream. What is that? The trapped versus untrapped. So, I will just have to say, I have learned so much. This is going to be one of those episodes where I just go back and listen to over and over and over again,
Yes.
just to dissect all the knowledge that you have bestowed upon us in this episode, because OMG, like, just thank you. Thank you for
Yes.
on to just letting us and our audience know about this. And what I will have to say, what I am loving seeing in the past, decade, actually less than a decade, is that there is scholarly research happening on music that I listened to growing up. Because for so long, especially in classical music, it's always been told that is not upstanding music. That is not have no worth. It does, because we don't ever say anything in classical music idioms. We always talk about folk music, like it has so much regard. But the folk music that I grew up on was hip hop, was R&B, was trap. But why is my folk music less than? So I am very thankful for you doing your scholarly research, and congratulations on getting your doctorate and being doctored.
Yes.
And in your position that you're in, here at Rose to Pitch, we are now part of your village, and we're just so thankful for you to be here with us today.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yes.
Absolutely. Well, and audience, I will have to say, please go back and listen. We'll drop all of the links down below so you can also be a part of Dr. Crawford's village as well. And if you would like to reach out, we'll have that down below as well. So until next week, we'll see you next time. Bye.